Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Dennis Poulette podcast. If you are listening, welcome. If you're watching on YouTube, welcome. Today we have an incredible guest, an old friend of mine from college. His name is Jeff Coleman. Jeff is joining us from Pennsylvania. I'm going to let him introduce himself, but today we are talking about the topic of how to teach our kids civility, how to teach them to be civil with other people who maybe do not agree with them. It's an important topic, so I hope you stick around. So let's get right into the interview. Jeff, thanks so much for being here today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? And we've known each other forever, it feels like.
Yeah.
Met each other back in college. But tell us where you're at now and what you're doing and how life is going for you.
Well, I'm first, thanks for having me on. It has been a few years since I'm thinking it's almost two decades, if not right at 20 years. And you look the same, you know. It's,
oh, yeah, right.
But I am in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where my wife Rebecca and I have our four kids. We have one teenager, and then it goes all the way down to age six, boy, girl. And before children, I was in politics. I had, right out of college, run for the state house in Pennsylvania. I was 25, got elected in a very difficult race. No other way to explain that race or that win by any measurement than it was a complete act of God. And I get thrust into being overnight a pretty well-known youngest member of the legislature, lots of attention, and ran in politics very hard and did it very aggressively. Was ran for re-election, won again, and was preparing to run for either a third, at least one more term before I ran for something else. And everyone was encouraging along the way. I don't think what anybody prepares you for, either in any level of public role, whether you're a pastor or in media or in politics, any of these roles where your constituency is bigger than your family or your boss, where you're essentially the boss of your own life and you make decisions of how you make the days. How do you build a marriage? How do you build a family? How can you be normal when everyone says you're special? And right about two terms in, we had to make a really tough decision, Rebecca and I, that I'd leave politics and we'd have a real life and a real marriage. And I had no idea whether or not that would lead to me doing anything in media or politics again. It ends up having to have been the path that God had us on. So I very shortly after launched a company called Churchill Strategies. It was about 2005, as a premise, was helping people who wanted to do politics differently, who were principled, who had convictions about what they believed, but did not want to do it in a negative way, wanted to be civil, wanted to change not just the laws, but the manners. The founders, fascinating, many of them wrote about, and the philosophers years ago, even before the founding of our country, said that it isn't good enough just to have people with ideas. You had to have what they called manners and morals. Not perfect people by any stretch, but people who came from a place of conviction, who didn't just say the words, but were connected in some way to the words that they said. And again, that does not mean people who were perfect, but it means that there was a humility that was prized in leadership. And so from that point of leaving politics till today, I've had a chance to work with a lot of great leaders at all different levels, some in business, some in politics, some who lead companies or schools or are writing books to help them refine their message and get it out to people. So Churchill Strategies is my company. That's what we do, and every day is an experiment in trusting God.
Yeah, and so I've wanted to have this conversation with you. I think I told you this already for a long time about civility, being able to actually talk to each other in a civilized way, because you wrote this book in 2016, with all due respect, right? That's the name of the book.
That's it.
And I've seen from 2016 until now, I've seen you as a person who has been championing that, you know, hey, we can agree to disagree. We can have civil discourse. We can talk politely to each other, even though we disagree, which is actually kind of interesting, because to me, it's like a difference, because, you know, everything that I've ever studied about postmodernism has been, well, you have your opinion and I have mine, and that's okay. And it feels like we took a hard turn from that. And now it's, you have your opinion, I have mine, and I'm going to fight you for it. And so what I want to talk today about is kind of like from a parent's perspective, what is it that we can do to help teach our kids about this civil discourse and the fact that you don't have to be angry all the time at the people who are different or who think differently or who even hold very closely these beliefs that maybe you don't agree with. So that's kind of what I want to talk to us about. I don't know. I don't have a lot of great questions, but what would you say is like some of the best things that, that I can do with my kids or you could do with your kids or even just in general we can do to be able to say, you know what, it's okay. We're going to take a breath and we're going to calm down and we're going to actually have real conversations.
The first thing a parent can do is not have two sets of rules for people in public and your house. Kids see the difference. When you see a public figure, and I'm going to speak into the political world, Republican or Democrat, who is running for a high office, senator, governor, president, whatever, and you're in the car and you're listening to a debate, and or you're listening to a campaign commercial, and the immediate response to something that they say is vulgar or inappropriate is you either have a choice to turn the channel or defend that person because that's your person. You wear the red jersey or the blue jersey and you say, ah, just what they do in politics, honey, but you're not allowed to talk like that. Immediately, they see the kids sense the hypocrisy. They know that there are two sets of rules. And you've created an opening for them to be able to live two different lives. So the first thing is all rules apply. The second thing is, well, why? Why isn't it okay to cuss out a political opponent? Because there's this idea out there that we say, well, you know, we tried nice before. Nice, you know, nice people always lose. You know, blessed are the meek. But when's the last time a meek person won anything? You're taking all of the teachings of Christ and the Sermon on the Mount, and you're saying, got it, that's in the ideal world, but we live here below, not in heaven. And that means we have different rules. And so our rules are the rules of the street. So as long as the person who is using those rules of the street is using them to do good things, shouldn't we have suspend the rules? All those fruits of the spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, you know, gentleness, self-control, that's great in the ideal world, but we live here in a fallen world, so we're going to make excuses for that. Kids sense the hypocrisy in that. The third thing is, well, go ahead. Yeah, Dennis.
Yeah. I was, so basically the first thing is try to have consistency in the way that you are acting or reacting or, you know, hey, it's okay that so-and-so says this because, you know, that's just the way he is and that's what got him here or what, you know, I'm thinking about those things. But yeah, so don't let that seep in to your conversations with your kids. And then the second one is kind of similar, right? Like kind of like let it all, you know, have that umbrella of fruit of the spirit is what you were using.
Yes.
You know, don't let any unwholesome thing come out of your mouth kind of a thing. That's not like don't let any unwholesome thing come out of your mouth when you're in this specific, when you're at church or when you are But when you're in politics or when you're on Facebook, then you can do whatever
That's
you
it.
want.
When you mentioned social media, you know, someday our children are going to be able to reference, it's almost like going through, excuse me, the old box of letters, you know, in the attic after we're dead and gone, except they're going to have an immediate digital record almost of how we thought on any given day of the year at any time, matching up with world events. If you claim to be a faith person, a Christian person, a person who trusts in someone bigger than yourself, but you were in total free fall when events did not, an election, a pandemic, some other global event that interrupted your economic situation, and there was something you didn't plan for, and your reaction in social media, a reflection of your heart, was total panic and chaos. And they look at that and say, okay, so they said they believed in this stuff, but when it came time to test those theories, they didn't live that way. Social media will provide almost that digital DNA for people. But
yeah, that's pretty scary when you think about it, right? Like if we can say that we believe or that we follow or that we are trusting in a specific way, but we are all actually writing a biography, an autobiography, whenever it comes down to what we actually did and how we lived.
It's a journal.
And we're documenting it on our own. There's nobody following us around, but we are documenting what we believe in real time on social media. And our kids are going to get to say, you know, I mean, everybody wants to grab grandma's Bible and be like, oh, she was such a sweet, loving person. Look at how she loved Jesus. But our kids,
except in election years.
Yeah, I mean, but we don't get to see the rest of the journal, right? Like, and we've become very good at wearing our feelings on our sleeves on any of the social media platforms that we're on, where we'll just get on there and rail against people, whether it's over, you know, a football game or whatever. So you were going to say the third thing, and I cut you off. So
yeah, no, the third thing is, well, why? You know, so why do we have to be nice? And I think what we're confusing fruits of the spirit like kindness with being nice. So it feels like, well, there are wimpy people and there are bold people, and the bold people take risks with their words. They're a little bit rough around the edges, but they get it done. You know, they get it done. When you want a job done, you know, don't hire a Christian, because they're not gonna, when it comes time to make the tough calls and to, you know, they're gonna trust God, but they're not gonna to be any value here on earth, because they won't throw a punch. And the why behind the kindness or the restraint or the self-control that we have to exhibit in every way, in what we communicate, is because we believe, unlike any other kind of person we have at the core as a Christian, this notion that people are made in the image of God. So that means you are not meeting anyone ordinary. There is no person you will ever encounter, from the President of the United States to a person on death row, to the person who will attend to you in your final days in the personal care of the nursing home, that is any more or less valuable. There aren't any little people and there are no big people. So by teaching our children that there are important days like election days that have more consequence, and there are important days like Christmas and Easter, but all of the days in between are just ordinary days. They're regular. They're no significance. And then there are important people, and they get to do certain things by a certain set of rules. And then there are people who are not so important that they should probably keep the rules, because they'll get in trouble if they don't obey the rules. I mean, it's a complex thought, but the simplicity of it is, if we believe someone is made in God's image, that they are not just random creatures, the respect that they are entitled to is a mandate. It's a law. It's the law that's written on our hearts that says we don't have the ability to hold grudges. We have the ability to, we don't have the right to, we, you know, think about right where I'm sitting in Harrisburg, I guess it must be a decade, maybe longer ago, there was a tragic school shooting in Nickel Mine, Pennsylvania, right down the road from us. And I can't remember the number of children that were killed, but I think it was like 10 or 13, somewhere in that space, children killed. The response of the Amish community, one-room schoolhouse, gunman goes into the schoolhouse, slaughters these children, was to immediately reach out in love, not just to all of the families of the victims, but to the perpetrator, to the person who fired the weapon into that schoolhouse and slaughtered those children. In addition, they showed up to his funeral because he ended up dying in the process as well. And you go, the world looks at that, the watching world looks at that, parents look at that, children, they say, well, this is insane. Who would do that? A forgiven person would, a person who understands that they have been loved when they were not lovely.
Yeah, and like, to follow your train of thought, somebody who believes that everyone deserves love and grace. Like it's equal. It's for everyone. Correct. It's not just correct. Like, it's not just for those who attain it.
Correct.
So if you move that into politics, it's my candidate and the candidate that I did not vote for. They're both the same, equal under correct. God. People who are, you know, I mean, we're avoiding names, but I mean, you could say it. Donald Trump is loved by Jesus. Joe Biden is loved by Jesus.
Right.
They are people who God sent his son to die for.
Right.
And yet we are over here going, this guy is the scum of the earth. Or, yeah. I mean, and we all have blemishes. We all have problems. We all have things that we need Jesus for, right?
Imagine and so, the campaign commercials that would be run against us.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny because every time you know, somebody gets caught doing something, you're like, oh my goodness, now they can't be president because it's the end of the world now for that person, because as soon as something comes up, it's all dug up and it's done. You know, I mean, all of a sudden there's a computer that's got files on it or something, you know.
Right.
So I do love that, and it actually does come from. I mean, it comes from the Bible, but even if you don't believe the Bible, it comes from the Constitution, right? We believe that all men are created equal, okay, and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. So those are the things that we are.
Where people that are watching right now are thinking, yeah, okay, I got it, but there are some people who have made morally reprehensible decisions. And I know if you are a Biden supporter, you're thinking about the president's personal failures. And then, but if you're a Trump supporter, you're thinking, yes, but Joe Biden isn't pro-life, or he doesn't believe the way I do on certain issues. So he is morally reprehensible to me. But we've made this degree. We've said, you get a 4 stars, you get 3 stars. And so, yeah, but what about the 3 wives? Okay, yeah, but what about the laptop? And the, you know, but yeah, but what about?
Yeah,
and where we're going with almost every fight now, Dennis, we are able to reference. We don't argue or to try to persuade. What we're doing now is saying, but let me raise you one. I'll give you a scenario that is worse from the other side. We almost instinctually do that in social media.
Yeah, and then we. We can't even associate with those people or with certain people because they're, you know, like you said, I think you said morally reprehensible, right? So
correct.
there's that issue of, well, I'm better than you. So you are now the scum and I'm going to have to go the other way. And then you get the other issue is, what do you do whenever, and this is maybe off topic, but what do you do whenever you're sitting there going, okay, neither of these options.
Right.
So then you get the worst, the better, lesser of two evils. That's the word I'm looking for. And so that's, you know, that's where a lot of people, I think, were put into a position this election specifically trying to say, okay, well, how do I balance that out? And the real question I think that we want to have is, okay, so it's okay. I want to go back to what you were talking about with like the people who are seeking to be patient and kind and that, what do we do? I lost my train of thought.
What does it practically look like? I mean, what does it practically look like when we are convinced in our mind that the other person, here's how I think the train of thought goes. I find out that the person I am not voting for is supports certain things that I don't agree with. I now believe, because I have become convinced that this is the way in my conscience I should vote, I am going to now do my best to shame, to embarrass, to expose to all of my friends the flawed character of the other person. I don't spend very much time promoting my candidate, but I spend most of the time trying to get other people to believe what I believe. What I have found, and I think most of you have found out as well, that's not how we persuade people. We persuade people in a marriage, not by saying, hey, I understand you want to do that, those colors in the kitchen, but I have a study here and it shows that, you know, 35% of the people that this, you know, this color will not wear well. No, you don't present data and facts and you don't try to embarrass or shame. You in love say, can we talk about this? Can we have coffee? Can we eat first before we talk about this hard thing? In politics, they don't care what time, if you've eaten or not. I don't care if you're sleeping. I'm going to post this comment at 3 a.m. in the morning so that when you wake up, you're usually thinking of someone in your head, you're going to get this beautiful poke straight to the heart and the chest, and it will convict you of what you believe, and you're going to change your opinion, and you're going to thank me for it when you wake up and say, thank you so much, you're right. That sarcastic meme I posted, that little video of the hidden ballots or the fraud or whatever it is, has now changed my mind. Nobody changes their minds because of that. In fact, it just deepens the rift between people who might normally get along.
Yeah, and there is a difference between probably attacking a policy or even a candidate.
Yes.
And going after their supporters.
Yes.
Because what I've seen and what I've felt and what I'm hoping that my kids won't fall into one day is the whole issue of, well, if you support so-and-so, then you are automatically placed into a specific category of person.
Right.
And then now I can't associate with you because you are with that guy. And so to me, like, that's not the civility that we're looking for. That's really enough to rip and divide friendships, to divide families, to divide a whole bunch of even in this election cycle, whenever you see, well, you don't want to speak out loud who you are voting for, because as soon as you do that, you know you're going to lose like real friends.
Correct.
And so if you speak against this guy, then your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, they're going to be like, oh, I can't believe you support that and that and that. And then they start calling you names and all of that stuff. And so you're like, so how do we get to the point where we can actually sit down at the dinner table on Thanksgiving with people who I know supported the candidate that I didn't vote for.
Right.
And I can sit down with them and say, you know, hey, this is what happened. This is what I believe. That's what you believe. Can we be civil about it?
There was some wisdom behind a secret ballot. You know, there was real wisdom behind Army recruiters, Navy recruiters in World War II saying, you know, there are two things we don't talk about. We don't talk about religion and politics. Now, There are places in friendships, in trust, in confidence. When you reach a point in a friendship and you're willing to say, you know what, here's what I struggle with. Here are my failures. Here's what I did in high school that I'm ashamed of. Oh, and who's who I'm going to vote for. And this is what I believe about God and his creation, or what I don't believe about God and why I don't believe that religion is important, whatever it is. What we've done right now, though, is we've reversed all of that. We've said friendship can come later, but first I want to hear what you have to say about these issues. If you do not agree with me, unfortunately, I'm going to have to put you out of my mind, because you're not, I'm not in a place, a safe place. You're invading my safe space. What genuine friendship and community does is it builds the relationship on the things that are important in life, the real importance of life, being neighbors, someone getting sick, you showing up, running to the store for someone who just had a baby, all of those things. Politics comes in and it drops a wall in between people because we are assuming motives. Final point on this. One of the old maxims at the founding of the country that was important, and one of the major rules of civility, and if there are unwritten rules or stated rules of civility, is that we judge measures, not men. And what that simply means is we don't ever question your motive. When you cross the line and say, I know why you did that. I know why you did that. I know why you like that person. I know why you said that thing. We take people literally at face value. Over time, we'll find out more about their methods, their motives, their rationale behind it. But if you question motives, when I was on the floor of the House debating, if I did not go through the Speaker of the House, meaning, Mr. Speaker, I want to address the maker of the amendment or the author of the bill. And then the speaker says, Representative Coleman, you're now recognized for comments on the bill. And then I go back and I go, Mr. Speaker, would the maker of the amendment rise from interrogation? I'd like to know why. And this is like ping pong, but I have to talk through the speaker. I have to talk through the ref. I can't speak directly. Why is that? Why did Thomas Jefferson and all these people write that into the rules that you had to talk through somebody? Because human nature is, when I'm hot, when I'm angry, if I go directly at the other person, I'm going to say things that I'll regret later on. Social media has a delete function, but it does not prevent you from posting. That's the hard part.
Yeah, and it's a difficult time. Because you get distracted by other things. And so you say, well, why are you wearing that specific color?
Right.
And so then you just start projecting all kinds of stuff onto people.
Correct.
Whenever they probably had no idea even that stuff was happening. And I've seen a lot of that just in general, but, not even.
We're pretty good. We think we're pretty good profilers.
Yeah, not just in politics. I mean, I've seen that in the church world. I've seen that in, HOA board, all of those kinds of things where we're just like, hey, I know he posted that on Facebook just to get a rise out of so and so. And that's
then
where
you have to meet them in person and you realize you want to know why there's tension. So social media is the biggest expression of it. It's the most practical way. But our kids are watching how we react to adult behavior. Look, I think you may end up concluding, if you're a supporter, say, of President Trump, you may conclude that he is flawed, but I'm going to support him. Supporter President Biden, the same thing. But what you can't do is create a false narrative. You can't invent a story based on what you think about someone in order to justify to your children why you're supporting someone. You have to be honest with them to say, I don't like what that person's doing. And if you ever do that, you're not living in our house. But I'm voting for that person because I believe in this policy that this person supports. I'm voting for the policy, but I'm not really a fan. The problem is sometimes we jump that wall and say, I'm a fan and I'm going to cheer because that's our person on our team. And I'm going to excuse all of that behavior. Or the other side was worse. So I'm, you know, I mean, it just, we really do convoluted things and the children get it. They do understand when we're making this compromise.
Yeah. And I think probably, you know, to kind of maybe almost wrap up, but I'll give you another couple of minutes for you to talk. But what I'm thinking is, like, what I've tried to do with my oldest son, who's 15, is have the actual discussion about specific things, because he and I definitely don't see eye to eye on specific things. And he's hearing different things from the YouTubers he watches or from the media that he consumes, because he consumes different media than I do. So we are probably at separate, you know, places in what we believe and where we're at. He also has less life experience and all of that, but at the same time, he can express what he believes. So to me, it's having that conversation and knowing, like what you said, that regardless of who, he can't vote yet, but regardless of who he votes for in the next election, he's still my son.
Right.
And there is still that bond that goes deeper than whatever the politics or whatever the even the hard, fast beliefs that we have. Those things are secondary to that love that we have for each other. And the, even if we don't see eye to eye, that's okay. And so I think part of that is being able to see that. And I love what you said about, you know, thinking about people as created in God's image, being the kind of people that God loves no matter what, and therefore we can disagree with them on a lot of things, but that covers all of that based on who God is and the way that he has created us. You know, those are my thoughts. That's what I'm thinking about right now.
I think they're great thoughts. I do think that we can learn a lot. I'm trying much harder to listen to critics who even see my conversation. I had a conversation with a great friend yesterday who saw the things that I was posting on social media on civility, but took offense to them because he believed that that was being a passive aggressive personal critique on his choices. On how he ended up voting and who he ended up supporting for president. And I ultimately did not delete the post because I checked my motives on them, but I have to be aware that everybody is not reading even, you know, if I post I love you on social media, there will be people that will find that I'm being sarcastic, as tongue in cheek. What are you talking about? Are you talking about what we're just watching right now? Why did you post it now and you didn't ever post it before? And we're really overanalyzing each other because we have so much exposure to our stream of consciousness.
Yeah, and nothing replaces a face-to-face conversation about an issue. But for some reason, we would rather just roast people for what they've posted.
It's so much fun to take a social media conversation into a meeting. And we've had many, many friendships that have come out of two places. One, whenever I'm scheduled to do a TV program and I'm in the green room with someone they have put opposite me, I've found them to be some of my great friends over the years. And the other is in social media, where I take the conversation offline and say, hey, can we talk or can we grab coffee? And by the end of that conversation, we get each other most of the time. We understand where we're coming from. And it is not a big leap to say, okay, I love this person. But no communication, real communication, will guarantee a lifelong misunderstanding. We can't have that. It's not an option.
Yeah, and that's that brings me to the point of, like, you know, just clips. Like, all we're seeing are clips. We're not really seeing you know, we see the sound bites, but we don't see the entire conversation.
Everything that's pushed out of view in my frame right now, you can't see. You don't know if there's a fire over here, a mess over there. If I have, you know, you just see this, whatever I'm presenting to you right now.
Yeah.
It's an optical illusion.
Yeah. And that's what we have brought. And social media isn't the enemy. I feel like I've been harping on social media an awful lot during this talk, but the point isn't like, oh, get off of social media.
Right.
The point is, let's be okay with each other, regardless of what we post on social media. And then let's understand that we don't see everything, and we don't know, we're not all knowing. And it could be that that person needs to have a real friend call them up and say, hey, can we have a 30-minute conversation about that?
If you are reading someone's social media post and they are super passionate, I mean, not just passionate, but super hyper passionate about an issue, you can almost to a person guarantee that that passion is connected to personal life experience or something they are going through right now. And that has all the big, from gun control or Second Amendment liberty to abortion, to views on pornography or views on taxes. Everything in between is not someone reading a book on philosophy and coming through, but they have a friend, a relationship, a person who's suffering. And what they are hearing and seeing in our communication, verbal or on social media or other places, is always put through the filter of those experiences. That's why we have to say, let me assume your motives are the best, but what is the best way for me to hear you out? And the best way is in person.
Yeah, so I guess in conclusion, it would be, let's teach our kids to have real relationships with people and to be okay with talking through things without judging the person based on minimal information. I mean, I think that's kind of one of my big takeaways from today is if I can help my kids to understand that they need to be relational with people before they're judging people, then we should be able to be civil, both in public and in private. We should be able to sit down at Thanksgiving and be like, hey, I might not agree with your political candidate, but I love you and our relationship is more important than that, what you believe about Trump or Biden or whoever.
Yeah.
And those are the things that maybe we need to be teaching our kids.
And Dennis, I love it. I think you're right on. I think it's the right question to be asked.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for being here. I know you're out of time, so
it's my honor.
We will talk again later. Thanks so much.
I love it. Thank you, Dennis.
That was by far one of my favorite interviews that I've done of all time. I learned so much from Jeff, so much good stuff talking about how we can help our kids be civil. And I hope that you also learned some stuff. If you want to get in touch with me or with Jeff, our links are in the description below, or you can find them at DennisPoulette.com. Just search up Jeff Coleman and it will be there. But thank you so much for listening, for watching, and we will see you in the next video or the next podcast episode.